You're listening to Podcast by Committee, produced by Starting Five Productions. And now, here's Andrew and Max Brill.
Thank you, Mason, for the introduction, and welcome back to Podcast by Committee. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew Brill.
And I'm Max Brill.
And we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about. We've got some playoff basketball, some playoff baseball, some COVID NFL. But Max, I want to start with an icon, or a legend, I guess, almost, in the NHL, and that would be our very own Henrik Lundqvist, who was bought out by the New York Rangers. And I don't know that you know of any other goalie from the Rangers. I know that he's been the goalie for the Rangers for a very long time, and it's going to be tough to see the Rangers without Henrik Lundqvist.
It's going to be really strange, Dad, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I'm pretty sure my first NHL game, I remember who it was. It was the Rangers playing against the Atlanta Thrashers. Remember them? Yeah.
I do. I remember the game because it was a tie, and I was making you leave after the third period. It was going into overtime, and you were very young at the time, and you were angry with me but I knew that it was better to have you angry with me than your mother angry with me for not getting you home in time.
Understandably so, but so I think the game ended up at a 3-2 Rangers overtime win. But regardless, Henrik Lundqvist's first season was in 2005, his rookie year. He started as a backup, obviously, but I'm pretty sure that game was in 2006. So that would mean that basically the entirety of my life as a Rangers fan, Henrik Lundqvist has been the goalie, and it's so strange. I mean, this, I guess this is what happens in a rebuild, but it's just like he's been the franchise staple. I have my only Rangers jersey is a Henrik Lundqvist jersey. It's very weird for me.
It will be strange. And yes, it's a rebuild, but they have, you know, two really good goaltenders behind him, and he is 38 years old, and he's not the king that we've come to know and love. And look, he's getting up there in age in professional hockey standards, and there's two 24-year-olds, Alexander Georgiev and Igor Shesterkin, who are both, you know, very good goalies. And Shesterkin, actually 24 years old, was third on the depth chart, went 10-2 in his 12 contests this season. So it was time to move on, but it was tough to hear, because no matter what you think of the Rangers and what you think of, you know, the owner of them, Henrik Lundqvist was the consummate professional.
100%. I mean, look, you never heard anything about this guy, and I think that's a good thing. He was Jeter-esque. I mean, really the only reason that he's not as revered as Jeter in New York is because he wasn't a Yankee, and if you're a Yankee, you automatically have God status, and he never won a Stanley Cup. But aside from that, I mean, this guy has been the franchise for the last 15 years.
That's right. And the last time that the Rangers did get to the Stanley Cup, I actually got to cover that. To watch him game after game just stand in his locker and answer questions, he was always pretty positive and never threw anyone under the bus, always took the blame. He's a New Yorker through and through, even though he's from Sweden. And we will miss, as Ranger fans and hockey fans, we'll miss Henrik Lundqvist. And he's one of many veteran goaltenders now who are free agents.
Yeah, before we switch subjects, because I know we're about to do that, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Tampa Bay Lightning for winning the Stanley Cup. And that's just such a testament to how much of a New York sports family we are, that we talked about Henrik Lundqvist getting bought out before we talked about the winner of the Stanley Cup Finals. But just want to give a shout out to Tampa Bay for doing that, because they've been in the hunt for like the last 5 or 6 seasons, and they've been really, really good, and finally got to the promised land couple nights ago.
And then when you talk to people, the Stanley Cup is one of the harder championships to win, and kudos to them for getting it done and raising that Lord Stanley's Cup, for sure. But yes, let's switch gears, Max, and let's talk a little bit about the NBA. And this has been such a strange season. When you think about it, Doc Rivers, who had a great record with the Clippers, loses and gets let go. He is now the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. But I'm just wondering, before we talk about the Heat and the Lakers, what your feeling is about letting these coaches go in such a strange time. I know the Clippers were supposed to do a lot better. They were supposed to beat the Lakers and get to the NBA Finals, but they didn't. And it cost Doc Rivers his job.
I think the bottom line is that this was a really, really strange season, and the coach can't sink the buckets at the end of the day. Like, you look at the Clippers' numbers during the bubble in the playoffs, and they just weren't up to the standards of where the Clippers were in the regular season outside the bubble. And obviously, this is a team that was specifically designed to win a championship, right? Kawhi, Paul George, Lou Will, like it was a really good squad. And the Clippers were excellent throughout the regular season, but the bubble is just such a strange environment. These teams obviously have never experienced anything like it before because there's been nothing like it ever to experience before. And it's really, really, I think, unfortunate, honestly, for Doc Rivers that he would get let go after a disappointing playoff finish, especially considering the fact that Doc Rivers is one of the better coaches in the game right now. So for him to be a free agent, the blame has to fall on somebody, and the head coach is usually the first to take the blame. That goes for any sport. Head coach is usually the first to get the credit, first to take the blame. And in this case, it just so happened that Doc Rivers was in the wrong place at the wrong time. The Clippers underperformed, and Doc Rivers is the fall guy. I don't think he deserved to get fired, and I'm excited to see what he will be able to do with the talent on the Clippers, because they have a very, very talented roster that hasn't been able to finish the job.
Yeah, and one thing that struck me about that is Paul George's comments after their loss, saying that, well, you know, this wasn't a championship or bust season. So you hear that, and you're like, look, this guy clearly can't play for the Yankees because it's always championship or bust.
But I think that should be the mentality every season with every team. Like, why are you playing if you're not championship, right?
Without question.
That's what you're playing for.
Without a doubt. But when you hear a guy say that, and then you find out that it caused Doc Rivers' job, you're thinking, what the heck is going on? How is this guy saying, yeah, it wasn't championship or bust, and then just a couple days later, Doc Rivers loses his job. Now, look, he wasn't unemployed for long. Reports are it's a 5-year deal to coach the 76ers. So good for Doc Rivers for getting an opportunity so quickly. But it just struck me as odd that a guy would come out and say something like that. Look, it wasn't a championship or bust season. I was floored. I couldn't believe that I heard that coming out of someone's mouth when all you heard, Max, in the bubble was, we're the Clippers. We're coming. We're going to beat the Lakers. We're the team to beat. They have to go through us. And they didn't even get to you. They had to go through the Denver Nuggets. So it was just strange. I wanted to, just get your take on Doc Rivers, not only losing his job, but also finding a new job, and good for him. I think that he'll be very good. For the 76ers, they need a little bit more discipline, I think, and they need to get more out of Ben Simmons for sure, because I think that kid is a real big talent, and he's just got to stay healthy, and hopefully Doc Rivers can figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, we've talked about Ben Simmons before on this podcast. Ben Simmons, a guy you interviewed before.
That's right.
Leading up to his draft night, and he is, like you said, the guy on that team. I mean, if he can figure it out, he has so much raw talent and has just been underwhelming to this point in the NBA, which isn't to say he's a bad player, right? Like he's obviously a very good player, but he leaves a lot to be desired when it comes to shooting the basketball. And if he can improve his shooting, right? He averages over 16 points a game for his career, excellent on defense as well, but he just doesn't really have a shot and he relies on his athleticism to get to the bucket. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Doc and the Sixers.
Let's turn the page and talk about the NBA Finals. And I was watching the game last night, Max, and the Heat jumps out to a 13-point lead, and you're thinking, really? Can this really, really happen? And I was actually shocked. They were playing really, really well, and the Lakers they didn't look like the Lakers, really. And then all of a sudden, they started, with subs in, they started looking like the Lakers, and there were two droughts that the Heat went on. I think it was somewhere in the first quarter they went a 3-plus-minute drought of scoring, and then they went almost 4 minutes in the second quarter without scoring. Look, you know what? In a 24-minute half, you can't go without scoring for almost a third of it and expect to win.
Yeah, and that was on the heels of an insane opening 6 minutes in the first quarter where they scored like 25 points in 6 minutes and change, and then just couldn't shoot the rest of the night. Obviously ended up losing huge in game one. You never really expect the beginning of an NBA Finals to start off like this, although obviously the Lakers are very, very highly favored. An almost 20-point loss in game one is not a good sign, regardless of who's playing. So at this point, I really think it's LeBron's finals to lose. LeBron and AD showed what they were made of last night. As gritty of a win as you can have, I guess, going down early. And the Lakers just ran away with this one. I mean, it looks like that's what's going to happen the rest of the series, because the Lakers have an element of physicality on their team that the Heat just will not be able to match. I mean, they have these guys who are great shooters, Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, but they don't really have anyone to match up with LeBron and AD. And at the end of the day, that's going to be the difference maker.
Yeah. And if they try and head to the hoop, like Dwight Howard, just look, you know, he's only playing about 15 minutes. Why not use the five fouls? So, you know, we'll send him the free throw line, which there was a big discrepancy. You're talking about 14 free throws for the Heat and 27 for the Lakers. The thing for the Lakers, they hit 25 of those, and you love to see that. You love to see a team take advantage of the free ones. 92.5% from the free throw stripe. You love that. Almost 40% from downtown, 45% overall. That's a recipe for success. You know, when you consider that the Heat only shot 78.5% from the free throw line and 31% from downtown, that's not going to win a ton of ball games.
Yeah, and keep in mind also that Butler, Dragic, and Bam all got injured in this game.
That's right.
So if they're out in any capacity or limited, I really don't see any way that the Lakers lose a game, to be honest with you.
It's fun to watch LeBron James, because I think in the back of his mind, he's saying, all right, young fella, talking about Anthony Davis, hey, take me there. Take me there. LeBron doesn't, he did score 25, played 36 minutes, but he's riding Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis was just dominant last night. There's no other way to slice it.
He, 9 rebounds, 34 points. He was a plus 23. He had 3 blocks. So, look, 10 for 10 from the free throw line. He shot incredibly well, 11 of 21, 2 of 4 from downtown. So, you know, Anthony Davis has had himself a playoffs. He's kind of announced that he's here. He's with the Lakers now, and he's like, look, you know what? I know LeBron James, but you're a little bit older now. Let me take the reins here and let's go. He also had 5 assists, Anthony Davis. The Lakers are right now looking like they're a little bit too much for the Heat.
That's it. You just said it all right there. The Lakers are too much for the Heat right now. I think it would be appropriate to switch to MLB, where we've had a bunch of really, really good games and good matchups. I mean, the Yankees-Indians game last night, maybe the best game that I've watched all postseason. It was just a back-and-forth affair. And a couple more games today. The Athletics clinched against the White Sox, which I was excited to watch the White Sox this postseason. Unfortunately, they had to go out so early. The Braves clinched, and they didn't allow a run in 22 innings, which is incredibly impressive. And I'm a little surprised given the Braves pitching staff.
You look at that first game, both staffs, unbelievable. How did you go 13 innings? And look, Cincinnati lost that. The Braves didn't win that game. As far as I'm concerned, Cincinnati lost that game. And we'll talk to Edgardo Alfonso about situational hitting. And you know, he's going to be our chairman of the committee. And we'll get his take on, you know, situational hitting and stuff. But they had runners in scoring position and even runners on third base with less than 2 outs and just didn't get them in on at least three occasions that I remember, and maybe even more. It's just an amazing thing. And when you talk about the Yankees, can someone tell me who this Gio Urshela guy is? I mean, he's been playing really, really well for a few seasons now. But my goodness, 5 RBI in the playoffs, hit another big home run. He's been amazing, and that's one of the bright spots.
Well, he's really good. I mean, that's the bottom line. One of my roommates here at school is like the biggest Gio Urshela fan I've ever met in my life.
He should be.
I think he's his favorite player. And Urshela is a guy that has had a very up and down career. I mean, he started with the Indians, he made his debut, and he just couldn't hit. His time in Cleveland, he had a .225 batting average and a .587 OPS in 148 games. And the reason why he played so much is because he was excellent on defense. And now he's excellent on defense for the Yankees and also has a .310 batting average while playing for them in 175 games. I don't know what changed. I don't know how he changed it, but he has all of a sudden become one of the best hitters in a stacked lineup. We're talking about Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Gary Sanchez,
DJ LeMahieu.
DJ LeMahieu. Clint Frazier. I mean, it's like, it's dumb how many good hitters they have. And Gio Urshela is the latest find.
I saw an interview with him.
And I forgot Gleyber Torres, by the way.
Right, exactly. I saw an interview with Gio Urshela, and he said it was basically confidence. The Yankees just said, look, we're going with you. And that gave him the confidence that he didn't mind failing. If he failed a little bit, it was okay. And that's where it came in, where when he was with the Indians, he just felt like he had to do too much. And you see what happens when you try and do too much.
Yeah. And I mean, he's whatever he's doing is working. So he needs to just keep doing that. But one other series that I want to talk about before we shift subjects once more is the fact that the Marlins beat the Cubs in game one. And now we'll have two opportunities to win against one of the best teams in the National League to go on to the NLDS. I don't even remember 2003 because like I was 5 years old, but are the Marlins just magic when they get to the playoffs? What's the deal?
You know what? They have a lot of young guys who just don't know any better. And when the bright lights are on, it's just like, we're just going to go out and play and have fun. And that's exactly what they do. It's quite an amazing thing to watch when you watch the Marlins, because you're thinking, you know, what in God's green earth is Derek Jeter doing? Well, Derek Jeter's doing a fine job, it would seem, to get this team to where they have to be. And unfortunately, they were supposed to, as we record this on Thursday, they were supposed to play today and possibly wrap up that series with the Cubs. That was rained out, so they're going to have to play tomorrow on Friday when we publish this. And unfortunately, Starlin Marte is now out for the rest of the series. He was 2-for-4 in that first game, and he got hit by a pitch on the hand, broken hand. He's done. They have some talent on that team. I don't know where they would be over 162 games, but you know, they only had to play 60, and here they are trying to make some noise as a 6 seed to knock off the Cubs, who are a 3 seed. Now, if the Cubs lose this, boy, oh boy, that's a big blow, because they were supposed to be much better than this.
Well, it would be a big blow, and that's part of the nature of having a 3-game series, is that any team can win a 3-game series. I know this sounds insane, but bear with me for a second. The Mets could beat the Dodgers in a 3-game series. I don't know how frequently it would happen, but if they played 100 series, best of 3 games, or you simulated it, the Mets would probably win that series like 25% of the time. And 25% of the time isn't that crazy. That's the same amount as you flip a coin and it comes up heads twice in a row. So, right. Yeah, it's not that likely, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And it would be a huge upset for the Cubs, who are a team that's kind of struggled since their World Series with getting back there, even with all the talent they had on their roster. And this year was just an insane year for Yu Darvish. Kyle Hendricks was excellent as well. Alec Mills was really great. And Chris Bryant, my favorite player on that team, didn't have a great season, but the rest of the squad was not bad. They scuttled a little bit offensively, but they were a good team. And obviously the best team in the NL Central, one of the best teams in the National League. It would be, I say this a lot, but it would be interesting to see what the Marlins will be able to do in a 5-game, 7-game series.
It's interesting because, you know, the Cubs, who have their roster pretty much set. And before we recorded this, I went and looked up the younger players who are on rosters that may not have been there because of this, how strange this season is. They probably would have gotten to Double A and, you know, maybe gotten a taste when the rosters expanded. But the Cubs are one of the only teams that have only one player, a right-handed pitcher, Albert Alzole, who's, you know, really the young guy. When you look at the Cubs roster, they've been there, and they should be performing a lot better than they are. But like you said, you know, in a short series, it's a toss-up. It really, it's everybody's got to have a good day every day in a short series. Otherwise, you're going to be going home early.
Yeah, and one last thing, that the Cubs were the only team without a COVID case the entire season.
Talking about young players, Max, it's probably a good time to now bring in the chairman of our committee.
Now we're going to bring in a dear friend, a mentor, an all-time Met great, Edgardo Alfonso. Fonzie, it's good to have you on the podcast.
Guys, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. We've been talking about that for a little long time, though. But finally, we got me. You got me. Finally, yeah, you got me.
We pinned you down. Well, so my first question to you is, I think what's kind of been on the minds of the Mets community lately has been the sale of the team. There's going to be new ownership next year. Obviously, you played under the current ownership group and worked under the current ownership group. We are both lifelong Mets fans, so we've experienced it as well. What are you looking forward to? What are you expecting in terms of, you know, kind of the changing of the guard and ownership?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't really have anything in mind right now, but like you say, I play under Double Day, Nelson Double Day, when it was a partner with Wilton. I get to meet him, and I get to meet definitely the Wilton family, which would be extremely nice. You know, I think having a new owner is going to be a lot of change. I hope for good, because I think this is a time with the Mets fan in New York. They need to have some better. I mean, I don't say they haven't had, but something, you know, better guidance to have a great organization. The way it's supposed to. I know he's been great, but I think this guy, I don't know this guy personally. I would like to meet him, but I heard he's have a lot of knowledge about baseball, which one is good.
Fonzie, Stevie Cohen's also a lifelong Met fan. How special would it be for you to be back on, and maybe not the Mets bench, but certainly a minor league bench, either managing or coaching? Because I know that's when we had a discussion last season, you love to teach. You like to teach young guys how to play the game and how to play the game the right way and how to really grow as men. How important would that be for the Mets to give you a call and say, hey, look, Fonzie, we need you back?
Well, that'd be great, man. That'd be great. I love that. I mean, this is what I learned to do. I learned to play baseball. I like to teach the kids, like you say, and we're talking about Max Noah and everything that I've been learned, I would like to give, you know, to give to the kids. And I think if I heard this guy is a great Mets fan. And, you know, if they got me an opportunity back to be back to the Mets, it's been great, man, because, you know, this is my house. This is the organization that I was played for. And it's been a great honor. I mean, you know, to teach back the kids, to teach them how to play the game and how to be compete and especially be mentally prepared for anything in life. Because I learned that. To me, it's work. And I think you trespass into those kids, I think it's going to be great. So I'm looking forward for that.
It's going to be a strange minor league season, this upcoming season, because a handful of major league teams are getting rid of some of their affiliates. The Brooklyn mm-hmm. Cyclones are going to stay, but they're going to probably move to a different league. They're not going to be short season anymore. And that's obviously where we have a lot of experience. So mm-hmm. what do you think that's going to look like? You know, you came up through the minor leagues, you coached the guys in the minor leagues, and now they're getting rid of some of the affiliates. So what's going to be the fallout?
I think it's gonna be hard for the players. I mean, for the guy who needs a rep, a guy who had the talent, never played baseball before. They need to have something like, you know, to develop. A team. I know Brooklyn was a great plaza because all the college guy come on over there and introduced to professional baseball. I don't think they're gonna have that anymore. But it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be a lot of jobs taken away. A lot of kids with dreams to be a pro is gonna be a lot tougher for players to make to the big leagues. So I don't know what's gonna happen. But it doesn't look good for many many players. Even you know, guys who want to sign free agents. Even want to go to the draft. I mean, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. So hopefully, you know, work out pretty good, but it doesn't look good. It doesn't look the way, because minor leagues need, reps, playing time, games, you know, to develop a talent, to learn how to play the game, to make to the big leagues. That way, when they get to the big leagues, they already know what to do. But you need minor leagues to develop the guy. Like we're talking, you know, playing baseball, and social life and stuff like that. So if you don't have the opportunity, it's going to be hard for the new guys to play.
There'll be fewer opportunities for coaches as well, but with especially this season, you've seen players make that jump quicker. I mean, the guy that pitched today, Ian Anderson, pitched in a phenomenal game. He may not have made that jump to the major leagues had this season A, not been short, and B, the roster expanded to 60 guys. You think you'll see guys rushed up to the major leagues a little bit quicker now that there's fewer minor league affiliates.
It might be a little bit. It might be. I think it's gonna be. It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be interesting. You know why? Because I mean, right now with this COVID-19 thing, I think everything changed for everyone, including for baseball. And if you see it, we have Andrés Giménez last year. Andrés Giménez for the Mets. This is the guy who was projecting one more year in the minor league. Now they give the opportunity. They give the chance. Ali Sanchez, you know, all those guys, like the guy you just mentioned. It could be a little more pushing for the guy, but not everyone is gonna have the talent, the same talent to make that huge jump. You know, that's great. There's gonna be guy who have a great talent, but need more. You gotta bring it up slowly because you know you gotta frustrate that guy if he don't make that jump or he don't perform in the way he wants in different leagues, and then he's gonna get frustrated. And guess what? He's gonna give up baseball. With that great talent. So there's a guy like Michael Conforto. Conforto, when he came to Brooklyn, I saw him. My first time I throw in BP to him, I said, wow, this guy, his swing is right there. So I see this guy playing. I say, he's gonna be longer in minor league because this is ready to play in the big leagues. And, you know, the skill in Conforto, I think he played 2 years or year and a half and he went to the big leagues. But not everyone is Mike and Conforto, you know what I mean? So I think it's gonna be a question mark for some guys, but the other guys gonna be good because they're gonna be ready for playing the big league. So how positive that's gonna be, I don't know. We gotta see it.
How special was last season for you? You know, it was 18 years the last time the Cyclones won a championship. I believe your brother was the manager of that team. So,
yeah.
You know, it was – they need you guys. They need you guys in the organization to win championships. So how special was that season? You guys started out average, but it really picked up steam. You had – there were definitely peaks and valleys in that season. What changed and how difficult was it for you to endure those? I know being a major league ball player, you go through that. You'll go through a slump. You go through a hot period. But, you know, these minor league players hadn't experienced that, so you had to teach them, look, this is baseball, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're going to fail. Baseball, you're going to fail no matter what. And, you know, my brother is – I think it was 2001, I know he was a co-champion with the Hawks and Bali. So,
right.
So they gave the champion because I think with what happened with the 9/11. And then, you know, me, I went in myself. I mean, just me.
Oh,
and
so you're one up on him.
Yeah. I told as soon as the next day he called me up and said, hey, I did it myself. I mean, I don't have to share my championship with nobody. that was good. That was good. You know, yeah, it's hard. It's hard because when you got at the beginning of the season, what it makes hard about baseball or about minor league is like you have a team together. You have the 25 guys. You have the rotation all set up for that week. And then, you know, hey, guys got it called up. Guys got to, you know, send down. And then you had to redo it again, you know, everything. And sometimes you got to have guys, you know, playing and you got a hot bat. A guy throwing is a great rate reliever, and then they need it in the you know, a little higher up, and then you got to send it, and you got to start all over again. So that's, I think, this is the difficult part about manager and the minor league. But at the same time, it's good because you get to you never get old telling the guy the same thing. I never get tired to tell the guys, hey, you know, when we're going through a tough time, hey. Baseball is like that. Baseball, you always have a good day. You're gonna have a bad day. How are you gonna take it? That's what we're here to learn. And then you know, there are guys coming to my office. You know, Matt can tell you they really, you know, almost crying and tell me, hey, I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't have a hard time right now. I don't find myself in home plate. I don't find myself pitching. I don't find myself in the game. And then, you know, you got to tell them, hey, this is a process. You got to go through it. I think it's in the minor league, it's more mentally that you have to give to those guys to be positive because they never going through situations like that. Like you say, I mean, I went to play in the top of the big leagues. I mean, I play in the big leagues and I know what it takes when you go 0-4, and then, you know, next day you're going to face the tough guy and the tough lad, you're going to face a tough team. How are you going to prepare yourself mentally? Because physically you're already there, but mentally is more important than anything. And then I think this day, I mean, for me, it was the key to brought up a championship in Brooklyn. Besides, those guys have the great talent, because we have a tremendous talent there. We just need to push it a little bit. You just need to, you know, you need to tighten a little bit and tell them you guys can do it. If you guys don't believe you can do it, you're in the wrong sport, you're in the wrong team, you know, but you always believe that you can do it. And they did it. I mean, they did. That was a great run that we went to. We play against State College. We play against Lowell. We play Aberdeen. I mean, that was a great run. This guy made it, you know. And plus, we have a little help for our major league guys, but, you know, still.
So you're talking about mental preparation. You know, obviously have played in at the highest level, in the playoffs, World Series, and there's obviously playoffs going on right now. Does anything change when the playoffs happen? Because we've seen so far, I don't know if you've been watching, Padres have been running into outs. The teams just seem like they're a little discombobulated, and it's the teams of younger guys. What goes into that mental preparation for a team like the Padres or the White Sox, who's just, they're all youngsters?
And Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know what? It's different now, because when they name or you hear playoff of wild card race or World Series, everything starts change, because you as a human being, you put pressure on yourself, you know, because, oh my God, you know, that's why we work so hard to get to this point. And that's when you say, you know what, I get to this point, now we're going to finish. But now you started doing crazy stuff or try to be over aggressive, and you go nowhere. You see the Padres making mistakes running the base. I mean, the whole season, they haven't done it. But, you know, the pressure is on right now, and this is how you're going to – I mean, you got all the computer and knowledge, whatever, but, you know, there's a common sense in the game that you don't teach. You know, there's a common sense in the game, common sense in the game that you have to, you know, it's your skill. Hey, anticipate. That's why I always tell my guys, every time you anticipate, it's going to be easy for you, because you're gonna know what to do in certain situations, and then I think it's more mentally to, because those guys being worked so hard, they're physically ready. How about mentally? They ready mentally? I mean, they have pressure right now with the all what you did in the season is over. Now you start another run, a great run for now, from the playoffs to the World Series. Mentally, I mean, it's not easy. You don't make it so difficult. And I think it's mentally, it's more needs to the sky right now.
Fonzo, when you played, there was it was almost like a different game. You would hit behind a runner. You would just try and make contact, get a runner over. Sometimes you'd see a sacrifice, which you never see anymore. How difficult is it for you to watch the game or even manage the game this way today with all the analytics and what it says?
It is hard. It is hard watching it. I think especially that we're talking about series, you know, best of two. I mean, you're going to wait for the guy hit a home three run home run with nobody on base? No, you got to start by, you know, little by little. You got to do the little things here, especially here in the playoffs to win games. I remember every time I got a chance to go to behind the runner, like you say, I will do it, because I got my guy behind me. And this is a team. This isn't all about me. This is a team. It's all about. I remember Piazza when he was talking and when he got introduced to a Hall of Fame, he would say that Fonzie made my job easy in New York, because he's a great hitter and, you know, every time he set the table for me. So which one is good? I mean, I like that, because I don't care about. I mean, I don't care much about myself. I care about more as a team. If you had to sacrifice myself to get in position to score runs and win games, I will do it. Today, you know, this day with the analytics and all stuff, it's good. I mean, it's fine, but you know, common sense of the game, you don't teach that. And then you know, if you have men in second base, no out late in the inning. I saw that. I saw games many times like that. Guys get in second base, even in extra innings, second base, no out. And he don't even move from second base. because everybody tried to hit the ball out. So simple as that, man. Bunt him over or try to hit the ball the other way. Make, you know, if you get third base, you're going to get close to the home plate. So, you know, little by little, especially like I say now in playoff, is what you need to play small baseball. You know, bunt him over, sacrifice, you know, little things like that make a huge difference in the game. 1-0, 2-0, game's over. So.
Yeah, I mean, even in our championship run, the last game against Hudson Valley, Ortega had a sacrifice bunt in that game, and we ended up going on to win. So you can win playing small ball. You know, I think you and my dad have a very similar philosophy in terms of how to approach the game. You know, I'm very much about the analytics and the home run ball, but it's so interesting, you know, I obviously came into baseball, working with you was my first job with a pro team, and it completely changes your perspective because, like, I don't really think RBIs are a great stat, but talking to DY every day, we would go back and forth and he would explain why it matters. So just like, it's kind of interesting to kind of get that perspective from guys who are baseball lifers.
Yeah. It's like I said, I mean, the analytics is fine. It's good. And you put it all together and you play the game the way it's supposed to in terms of you're going to listen and you're going to hear about the analytics. That's good. I mean, remember we're talking about, hey, let's play against Hudson Valley. How do we play then? And then you went to the computer and we do the chips and all the stuff. Which one's good? I like it because sometimes you gotta bring everything together to win games. RBIs, like DY say, RBIs and the end of the game is gonna make a huge difference, win or lose. ERA by the pitching, you know, how one pitch away and you can lose a game. So, you know, little things like that is make a huge difference in the game. And then I think you put all together and try to, you know, and try to play the game the way it's supposed to. But to me, I like small baseball. I like, you know, move them over. I like the bunts, like sacrifice bunts. We're talking about back again, man on second base. You got three chances. And those three chances, the guy don't even get to third base. So what is guaranteed me if you have bunt him over, and the guy goes to second base, and maybe the other guy got a broken bat, ground ball to second base or shortstop. The guy score. You know what I mean? Instead of try to go deep, all three different hitters, and you don't score the run, we know how. I mean, it's hard. You know, this baseball these days, and you know, as a pitcher, you throw the ball up and in, and those guys try to do the lunge angle. You got no chance. 97, 98 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour up. You got no chance, you know?
Is hitting a lost art, Fonzie? Because, you know, you like you said it, you just, it's launch angle. They teach these guys now, look, raise your launch angle, you'll hit more home runs. But I would watch you'd go the other way. You'd find a hole. You'd make contact. You watch guys like Pete Rose just hit the ball hard somewhere and good things will happen. A lot of hitters, Wade Boggs did the same thing. Is hitting a lost art because now so many hitters are just trying to hit? Look, I know that hitting home runs are sexy, but
they're good. But let me ask you a question. Okay. You hit 20 home runs. All right. If you're going to hit 20 home runs, at least you're going to have like 90 RBIs. But you hit 20 home runs, you have 40 RBIs. Well, that's a good make. I mean, it doesn't make anything. I mean, no sense, you know, to hit 20 home runs and get 40 RBI or 60 RBI. If you're going to hit home runs, I'd rather hit 50 home runs and have 80 RBIs, you know, because the RBI is where you make the money. I mean, okay, this guy is the RBI guy, is the double guy, is the guy who average, get on base. How many runs you score in the year? You know, little things like that. Productor, okay, this guy hit a 30 home run per year. And what is this? What is this? Is it production? What is it? All right, 30 home runs, you got 65 RBI. That number is not good for, you know, when you got to negotiate a contract, you know what I mean? So I'm right to hit like 10 home runs, get more RBIs, hit more doubles, score more runs than you. I don't got nothing against the launch angle stuff like that because it's part of baseball today. But if you ask me, I say, well, yeah, not everybody, every hitter can do that, you know. And they try to teach that to every hitter right now. Even you go on the computer, you go on YouTube, and you see guys teaching launch angle because this guy hit it and say, no, it's not everyone can hit launch angle. You know, there's too many, like we're talking about talents. There are guys who have a talent that slowly, you know, and that guy have a talent that's really fast. And the same thing, the guy who's a great hitter, because he's get a top of the ball and he's still hitting home run because he's a great hitter. Albert Pujols is the guy like that. He's being survivor and he's a great hitter. He's a machine. They call him machine because he just get the top of the ball all the time. How many home runs does he have? 600 something.
A lot.
Barry Bonds. I never see Barry Bonds do a lunch angle. 700 home runs, you know? But not everybody can do that. And this day, I try to, you know, you see the guys and you try teaching. And believe me, we have a guy in Brooklyn a couple years ago, a shortstop, Manny Rodriguez. So he was hitting like 16 home runs in college, which one it was good. But, you know, as soon as I saw this guy hitting, I said, oh, my God, this guy's going to have a trouble here. He's going to have a problem because he was uppercut completely, launch angle too much. And the guy get frustrated, like half of the season. It was like, you know, in 40 at-bats, he probably struck out like 30-something. It's a lot, you know, and until we tell, hey, you got to change your approach in the home plate. You know, and when you start to feel better, when the confidence back, and then you do whatever you want. But right now, we're trying to teach you the right way to play, you know. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you've given us a lot. My last question is, what are you up to now? Everybody wants to know what's going on.
Right now, I just, I'm home chilling with my family. I just here at home watching Danny's game. Danny's been playing a game every Sunday, and me and my wife are going to watch the games, and, you know, just keep busy, you know, try to be busy. Because if you started thinking about what everything's going on, you're going to go crazy too. But we just try to be positive, have faith, and everything's going to turn the way it's supposed to. And we come to have our normal life back.
Alfonso, we appreciate you joining us. And, you know, I've said it before, I appreciate you taking good care of Max and, you know, helping him get a championship. He's one up on me.
He took care of me. By the way, he took care of me. Yeah, he did a tremendous job. Hopefully we get to see each other down the road somewhere, and you know, catch up and try to, you know, remember those days in Brooklyn, man.
Yeah. Thanks.
Like I say, anything do you need from me? Don't hesitate. You got my number and tell me, hey, what do you do with this guy like that? I heard that. Stuff like that, you know. But thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch, Fonzie.
All the best. Stay healthy, Fonzie.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Max, it's always great to talk to Fonzie. He's got a great baseball mind. I know that you spent a lot of time with him last summer with the Brooklyn Cyclones, and you know, he treated you like a son. You know, he called you his nephew, I believe. So
yes, he did. And still does.
And, you know, just a really, really – he's one of the good guys. And boy, oh boy, to watch him hit was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible to learn from him the summer of 2019. Probably the best manager that I could possibly have had to work with, because he really took me under his wing, and we had a great working relationship. We have a great relationship now, obviously still talk all the time. I'm a Fonzie apologist. I think he's a great guy and one of my favorites. Obviously, we're grateful to have him on the podcast. Yeah. But
that don't have to be an apologist. I'm a Fonzie fan, and that might be even apologist. Bigger.
I mean, like, I would walk through a wall for that guy.
It is time to move on and talk a little bit about the NFL, which is now having some issues.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because the NFL, you can't really play in a bubble, but they had a game canceled due to COVID this week. And it's not like MLB where you can just say, all right, well, let's play two tomorrow. It's the NFL, and you can play one game a week unless you want these guys to have more brain trauma than they already have. So I don't know what the NFL's plan is here. They said they're treating this as the Steelers and Titans bye week. And I don't know when they're going to play this game in the future, because the Steelers and Titans don't have the same bye week.
It'll be a challenge. And this is the first one. Let's just say that. This is the first one. You don't know if it's the only one. Only time will tell. Numbers are starting to creep up again in many parts of the country. as expected, you know, now that the weather's getting a little bit colder and now that October's here. So this is the first one, but possibly not the only one. So you may end up with, instead of a 16-game season, a 14-game season. They may have to cancel other games just because to make it an even playing field. But we'll see. They may have to move other games around to try and get the games in. We'll have to wait and see because this is the first one. But something tells me, Max, it might not be the last one.
I would be shocked if it was the last one. And I said before the season, not like in a I don't want them to play football way, because obviously I do. I'm a huge football fan. I want them to play, but I said I would be pretty surprised if the season went longer than 4 weeks. And it's looking like we're going to get past that point because the NFL's kind of just put a pause on the COVID problem for now. But it's going to come back, and that's part of the thing between NBA and NHL, which play in a bubble, MLB. The rosters are much smaller. The staffs are much smaller. NFL, these teams are huge. The odds that somebody just gets it by chance are pretty high. It's random, and it's unfortunate, but it's going to happen again. The NFL needs to figure out what to do once that happens, because for now they've just decided, all right, we're going to pause. We're going to put this on the back burner. We'll figure it out later. Let's keep playing football. But if one or two or three teams on top of the Titans has a COVID problem, you don't know, like, I don't even know that the NFL has a plan, because what do you do in that situation? Like, you, what do you even come up with? What's the solution? There isn't one, I don't think, because It's bad optics to play a game after any team gets exposed to it. And as the season goes on, there's going to be less and less time to make up these games or figure out a plan or whatever. So I think the plan right now is just to cross your fingers and hope it works out. But again, that's not really like a feasible solution. So we'll see what happens.
That's more like putting your hands together, looking to the heaven and praying.
This has been another episode of Podcast by Committee with Andrew and Max Brill. Make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, we're everywhere. And rate and review us on Apple while you're at it. It'll only take like 30 seconds, so go ahead over there and give us 5 stars. If you want to connect with us, we're on Instagram at podcast_by_committee and Twitter at podbycommittee. Or you can reach out to us via email, hosts@podcastbycommittee.com.
Thanks again for listening to Podcast by Committee. Special thanks to today's chairman of the committee, Edgardo Alfonso, championship manager of the New York Penn League Brooklyn Cyclones. Thanks again to Mason Pettit for the introduction and to Kevin McLeod for the music. Shout out to Hal Aaron O'Feel for the graphics. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Until then, stay safe.